What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. As always, like, subscribe, download for us. Give us a five-star review on Apple or Spotify. Subscribe to us on YouTube. You can find us on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, at Tackles Pod. On Facebook, search Between the Tackles. There's going to be video clips out there everywhere, highlights from all the shows. Be sure to drop us a comment, too. We love interacting with you. It really goes a long way to helping out the podcast. Pre-agency legal tampering window day one is just about in the books. Manish, welcome back. How are you tonight? How did you enjoy the first day of free agency?
Great. I am always amazed that within 10 minutes of the start of the legal tampering period in the NFL, there's like 15 guys who have monster contracts already agreed upon with teams. I cannot figure out how that happens. But all joking aside, yeah, you know, a lot of information quickly. A lot of players that people had been talking about for the last several weeks signing rather quickly to a lot of money. And, you know, as we heard when we talked to former salary cap guru Samir Suleiman and CBS sports analyst Pete Prisco, there was going to be a lot of money spent because of the outrageous salary cap space that teams have. And we'll find out in a year or two whether that was money well spent. But yeah, the money was flying. You know, none of it, as far as I know, went into my account. I'm not sure about you, but there's a lot of guys that got much richer today.
I certainly wish I could have a fraction of what some of these guys got in the first day of the quote-unquote legal tampering. You know, you bring up the whole first 10 minutes these guys are signed. Like, there's illegal tampering before the legal tampering. Let's all be real here. Like, we're not stupid. Like, that has to be going on for these guys to start dropping these monster contracts. Now, there were some big spenders for teams. There were some teams that maybe disappointed. You know, some players got some really good deals. You know, there's a lot to get into. So, Manish, let's kick us off. Where you want to start us with here? I think we should start with checking out which teams doled out the most money in free agency today.
Yeah, you know, you knew that the Titans and the Raiders, who had just an obscene amount of salary cap space, were going to make a lot of moves early, and they did not disappoint. The Titans doled out about $84 million in guarantees to a handful of players. The Raiders, about $80 million. But the big spenders were the Commanders, $92-plus million in guaranteed contracts. The Colts, $84 million in guarantees, most of that going to one player, which we're going to talk about in a moment. And then the Carolina Panthers. You know, we spoke about what the Panthers' needs were a few weeks back. They were clearly in desperate need of pass rush help because of the deficiencies in that area for the last couple years. And boy, did they dole out a big monster contract to a coveted pass rusher.
Yeah, it was wild watching it all unfold, obviously, from a Patriots perspective. We'll get into them in a little bit. I'm a little happy that they didn't dish out a lot of that guaranteed money. But let's start right away. We'll go right into it with some of these big winners from a player's perspective. We'll start right off the top. We're going to talk about guy who we knew was going to get paid. We talked about him with Pete Prisco. We talked about him with Samir. Wide receiver from the Colts, Alec Pierce, ended up re-upping with the Colts. Monster contract. As a Patriots fan, I'm happy that the Patriots weren't able to get involved in that.
Yeah, you know, it is fascinating because I don't think it surprised people that he would get the most lucrative contract among wide receivers, but it is jarring when you see the numbers. 4 years, $114 million, $60 million of which is fully guaranteed. So he's going to get that regardless of what tomorrow brings. $84 million in total guarantees. There's a difference between an injury guarantee and a skill guarantee. But by and large, we're talking about somewhere between $60 and $84 million probably over the next three seasons for Alec Pierce, which makes him the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL, which is, I mean, obviously laughable because he's not anywhere close to Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, or any of the truly elite players at the position. But I guess that Chris Ballard, their general manager, felt that, hey, look, he's a game-changing player for us. We cannot afford to lose him. He was a premium draft pick. so we're going to have to overpay. We understand who he is. Maybe he can still grow as a player because he's relatively young. But, you know, if you're Alec Pierce and his agents, you got to be laughing all the way to the bank knowing that you, of all people, are now the highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League.
Absolutely. And you got to think, you got to look back. I mean, I think when we talked, I think he had, what, 50 or 60 catches last year for just over 1,000 yards. So he's not really a possession type receiver. And the Colts, as a result of having to make this trade, ended up trading away their possession receiver in Michael Pittman for basically pennies on the dollar. Like, Michael Pittman shipped to the Steelers for a late round pick swap. And, you know, Michael Pittman is a good receiver. Like, he's a guy, like, if I was a Patriots, why the heck weren't my Patriots involved in that discussion? Would have loved to have Michael Pittman catching balls from Drake May, but alas, that didn't happen. But let's move on to another winner on the player front. And I'm going to go with Jalen Phillips going to the Carolina Panthers on a monster contract. It looks like 4 years, $120 million. Dude got paid. And like you said, Carolina needed to address their pass rushing, deficiency that they had over the last couple of years. And they're really hoping and banking on Jalen Phillips being that guy. How do you feel about it? He was your ego last year.
Yeah, you know, it was fascinating. I think it was a fait accompli in Philadelphia that he would not be back. Now, Vic Fangio is a huge fan of Jalen Phillips, you know, having coached him in Miami. He's the reason why Howie Roseman traded for Jalen Phillips before the deadline last season. The reality of it is, though, while he's still young and he is explosive and has the pedigree and the skill set to be a dangerous player, the reality and the production does not necessarily match up with it. In 8 games with the Philadelphia Eagles, Jalen Phillips only had 2 sacks, 7 quarterback hits. When you look at the totality of the 2026 season, combining both his stats with the Eagles and the Miami Dolphins, he only had 5 sacks. So the production doesn't match what this contract is. Four years, $120 million. There was no chance that Howie Roseman, given all of the young defensive pieces that he has to pay over the next couple years, Quinion Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, Jalen Carter, with all those guys coming up for deals, there is no chance that the Eagles could have come close to what Panthers general manager Dan Morgan ponied up for Phillips. I do understand what the Panthers did because it is a glaring need. When we did our first NFL mock draft a few weeks ago, I believe we had the Panthers mocked in the mid-first round getting a edge pass rusher. I think that might change now that Phillips is in the fold. But if you're Jalen Phillips, you just can't turn away that kind of money. It's ridiculous money. And I think, you know, as an Eagles follower / Eagles fan, I think, it was pie in the sky to think that the Eagles were going to have any realistic chance of retaining him.
Yeah, and I don't know. I as Patriots fan, we Patriots fans, we needed pass rushing. And, you heard the name get tossed around the talk radio spheres around up here in New England for a bit. I certainly am glad that money was not spent by the Patriots on a guy like Jalen Phillips. I want to move on to my final winner, for this. And I think you have one more after. We'll get to him after this. But Phillips is a former teammate from Miami, Tua Tagovailoa. All right. It's not often that you can get fired and be considered a winner, right? But when you get paid $54 million to go away, that's a pretty big win, right? You got to be happy with that. I mean, I would take a fraction of that. I would take a 0.01% of that to get fired and be able to move on. But, you know, he ends up getting a contract immediately. He signs a 1-year deal with the Falcons. I think it's a great landing spot for him. I think he's going to compete for a job there. I mean, Falcons, I can imagine under Kevin Stefanski, aren't 100% sold that Michael Penix is the guy. So it's a good opportunity for Tua to kind of rejuvenate his career. Now, do I think it's going to happen? Very pessimistic about that happening. But he's going to go play for a former coach of the year, a 2-time coach of the year, if I'm not mistaken, Kevin Stefanski, down there in Atlanta. And he's going to get a new fresh start, fresh opportunity to get into the get some playing time there.
And I totally agree. You know, and we'll talk about the Miami Dolphins side of this in a moment. But if you're Tua and you're getting, you know, basically $55, $56 million to play because he'll get the league minimum for the Atlanta Falcons, you are upgrading, going from a team in the Miami Dolphins, who I think is going to be absolutely horrible and potentially competing for the number one pick in the 2027 draft, to a team like Atlanta, who's got new life with Matt Ryan and their new general manager, Ian Cunningham, and you mentioned Kevin Stefanski on the sideline, and some incredible skill position players around him. Bijan Robinson, Drake London, Pitts. These are, you know, people who can make life easier for Tua if he can stay healthy, and that's obviously the biggest question mark with Tua because of his concussion history. But I think it's a great spot for him because financially he takes no hit whatsoever. That all gets dropped on the team that he used to play for in Miami. And now he gets an opportunity to go to a team with a head coach who I think that can help him on a roster that has some elite level players around him.
Absolutely. I think it's an incredible spot for him. You got one more winner there, Manish, before you move on to the teams?
It's the guy that I thought was the best free agent in this class. A lot of talk about whether it was Malik Willis, Trey Hendrickson. I'm going to agree with what Pete Prisco said last week when we had him on. I think it was Ravens center Tyler Linderbaum. And this is a guy who really, I mean, he made out like a bandit. And he's an exceptional player, so you don't want to take that away from him. But he signed a three-year, $81 million deal, which if you look closer at the breakdown of the contract, it's effectively a fully guaranteed contract. Now, on paper, it's not, because only the first 2 years, 2026 and 2027, are fully guaranteed. The 2028 season is guaranteed for injury only at this point. It's about $21 million. But that becomes fully vested and fully guaranteed in March of 2027. So because of that relatively early vesting date, barring a catastrophic injury this upcoming season, Linderbaum's going to see every penny of that $81 million. So I think it's a great move. You know, for John Spytek, the general manager, for Tom Brady, who oversees everything, and for new head coach Clint Kubiak. I think those guys made a strategic decision that, hey, we are going to invest the number one overall pick in quarterback Fernando Mendoza. And I can tell you, being around the NFL, there is no better friend for a rookie quarterback than a smart, skilled veteran center. You know, I saw it with Nick Mangold and Mark Sanchez, and those guys are invaluable, and I think that Tyler Linderbaum will be invaluable for Fernando Mendoza, worth every penny. You know, my understanding is that the Ravens made a highly competitive offer, but when you, again, look at what the Raiders ultimately gave him, essentially a fully guaranteed three-year deal for $81 million, I mean, that went above and beyond what any team probably would have offered. So great deal for Tyler Linderbaum. I think the Raiders get the best player in this free agency class.
Far, far and away the highest paid center in the NFL. The next closest is Creed Humphrey, who's about $9 million, average annual value on the contract behind Tyler Linderbaum. And it's kind of ironic to me, and I heard this on Boston Sports Radio today about Tom Brady's involvement. And you think about Tom Brady just spent all this money on a center, and you look at the guys that Tom Brady played with in his career at center. They were all either undrafted or like mid-round draft picks. It's ironic. And I think you're spot on with setting Fernando Mendoza up for success and having that kind of that interior of that line kind of, you know, solidified for the next, for basically the early part of his rookie contract. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Monster deal. Let's move on to some of the team winners. I'll defer to you first on this one, Manish. Who do you got for a team winner?
Well, I like what the Tennessee Titans did. Nothing necessarily flashy, but they had a ton of money. Their new general manager had an opportunity to hire his first head coach, and he hired Robert Saleh, and he gave Saleh essentially what he wanted, which is guys he's familiar with. On the defensive front, the Titans traded for Jermaine Johnson, who played for Saleh with the New York Jets. Today, he signed former Broncos pass rusher John Franklin Myers, who we had talked about several weeks back, to a three-year, $63 million deal to reunite with Robert Saleh. Oh, by the way, the Titans also upgraded by getting two starting cornerbacks and former Giants cornerback Cordell Flott, who's well familiar with the Titans' new offensive coordinator and former Giants head coach Brian Daboll. And the Titans also signed former Saints cornerback Alante Taylor. So I think they really did a nice job on the defensive side. On the offensive side, look, I think they overpaid for former Giants wide receiver Wandale Robinson, who is a possession receiver, probably a good number three receiver. But when you look at what they had in the cupboard at the receiver position, they needed to upgrade. And Brian Daboll clearly knows how to use Wandale Robinson, as evidenced by how Robinson played under Daboll in New York. So I thought they were smart decisions by the Titans. I don't think these guys are going to move heaven and earth to be dynamic players. But when you're the Titans and you're coming from where you're coming from, you give your defensive head coach and your offensive coordinator who they want and who they know can deliver for them. So I thought it was a really good start for the Titans, who doled out a lot of money. But, you know, at this point, it looks like it was strategically smart money spent.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you take a year ago with what the Patriots did, where they invested on the defense, they brought in a bunch of players. They got Milton Williams, you name it. For basically going into the second year of their quarterback's rookie contract, if Cam Ward takes a step forward, this could really turn things around relatively quickly for the Titans. And Robert Saleh, great defensive coach. So I think they really do win the day with that. I'm going to move on to a team that I hate with a passion, but I love what they did in the first day of free agency, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. They went out and they signed the Super Bowl MVP running back, Kenneth Walker, to a three-year, $45 million deal, about $28 million guaranteed on the contract. Look, this team has been searching for a running back for Patrick Mahomes and that offense for what seems like the past couple of, three, 4 years, right? And now they go out and get the best guy on the market, a guy who just went off in the Super Bowl against my Patriots. And I think it's a slam dunk fit for them. Another signing that they signed from my Patriots, this killed me to see Kyrus Tonga end up in Kansas City. I really thought that this was a player that the Patriots were going to be able to re-sign. I really liked what he brought to the table for the Patriots last year, specifically, obviously, on defense, but even lining up at fullback at times for the Patriots out there on some short yardage plays. A very versatile player, obviously, if he's being used on both sides of the ball like that. It's a real bummer that whole situation kind of blew up for the Patriots at the end. And obviously, I can't go without mentioning Travis Kelce coming back for another year. I mean, who knows what he's going to look like. He looked like a shell of himself last year. We'll see what this looks like this year for the Kansas City Chiefs. But if you're a Chiefs fan, you can't be hating what they did today.
Yeah, I liked it. There's question marks about whether this is a retooling year for Andy Reid. You don't know when Patrick Mahomes will come back. Mm-hmm. And when he does come back from the late season injury that he suffered, what will he look like for the first half of the season? I don't have high expectations for the Kansas City Chiefs in 2026, but I do like the Walker addition. They needed running back help because Kareem Hunt was on his last legs, and he's an unrestricted free agent. Isaiah Pacheco, I think, kind of leveled off, and you kind of know what he is as a player. He's also unrestricted free agent. They need an explosive option in that offense for Mahomes and company, and I think that Walker, if he can stay healthy, fills that bill. I'm actually a little surprised that Travis Kelce will be back, not over the last several weeks, because I think it became abundantly clear that he was going to return for another season, perhaps a final season. I didn't know if he needed to get clearance from Taylor Swift or not, but evidently we have Taylor Swift's blessing that Travis Kelce can play for one more season. Again, you have to kind of temper your expectations, but in this early stage of free agency, before the technical start of free agency, I like the moves that the Chiefs made. They didn't take any steps back, and I think they potentially could have taken at least two significant steps forward. Because I'm with you, Burge. The Tonga signing to me is an interesting one. It appeared that the Patriots were going to lock him up at the end of the season, and it didn't happen for whatever reason, and now he's going to Kansas City.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Just looking at our notes here, Manish. You liked the Bengals today, didn't you?
I do. Look, their defense can't be any worse, right? They were atrocious. That's the reason why they fail to make the playoffs or fall just short. Even when Joe Burrow is hurt, they magically make a run when he comes back, and they fall just short because no matter how great Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and the rest of that explosive offense is, the defense has always been a shortcoming. And we knew that Trey Hendrickson was not going to come back. So the question becomes, you know, how would they help out Zach Taylor on that side of the ball? And I like them signing former Chief safety Brian Cook. When we had Pete Prisco of CBS Sports on last week, he specifically named Brian Cook as one of his two steals in this free agency class. And they get Brian Cook for 3 years, $18 million in the first year, about $40 million total in his deal. I thought that was a really good addition on the back end. They also get an intriguing player, pass rusher from the Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks, Mohe Mafe, who's been a rotational piece in Seattle. And, you know, frankly, I thought he had a down season this past year, but he's been a productive player over the past several years. Clearly a guy who's going to be asked to do more for the Bengals defense. And again, an upgrade for what they have in that locker room right now. So those are two solid pieces, Cook and Mafe, to start off free agency. They're going to have the rest of free agency to add some supplemental pieces and then, of course, the draft. But you knew the Bengals were going to go hard on the defensive side. They just need to be league average. You know, if they're an average defense, a mediocre defense, they have a real fighting chance to be a playoff team. And if they get into the playoffs with Joe Burrow, they can be a dangerous team.
Totally agree. Love seeing them go defense. We talked about it ad nauseum all year, about the lack of defensive talent that the Bengals have had. I mean, it's been so long since I feel like that the Bengals have actually invested in their defense. So maybe they're finally getting the picture that, hey, we got to get a defense to help out Joe Burrow. You know, another winner for me, I'm going to go with the Dallas Cowboys, seeing them add another edge rusher via trade. This was via trade, so it wasn't really, you know, necessarily tied into free agency, although they did not have to spend money on their pass rush on somebody like Trey Hendrickson. You know, they need help on defense there. They have talent on offense. We know they have CeeDee Lamb. You know, Dak Prescott is an average to an above average NFL quarterback. I feel he was in it. We were talking about him being in the MVP discussion at some points last season, and the team fell off. So I think, again, continuing to address their defense is huge for them.
Yeah, I agree. And look, I give Jerry Jones credit here. Not overspending on Trey Hendrickson. And look, I'm saying this now as Trey Hendrickson has not been signed. So who knows, maybe the Cowboys will bring in Trey Hendrickson. But as of this recording, Hendrickson is still a free agent. I like giving up a day three pick for Rashawn Gary. Now, he's not at the level of Trey Hendrickson, of course, and he's not at the level of Max Crosby, who was available, but the price is so low, I think it makes a lot of sense. I thought it was interesting that the Cowboys and Green Bay Packers made another trade after the Michael Parsons trade, earlier before last season. This time, I think the Cowboys win this trade because I think that Gary's an immediate contributor and, as you said, you know, not a free agent per se, but during this free agent cycle, I thought it was a smart move by Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, and I'm sure Brian Schottenheimer is very happy about it as well.
Absolutely. And real quick, just before we move on to our losers, just a couple more teams to just quickly hit on the Giants with John Harbaugh, you know, going out and bringing his guy Isaiah Likely to New York, signing Tremaine Edmonds and offensive tackle Jermaine Illuminor. I think that they're doing a great job there, starting that rebuild for the Giants under John Harbaugh. And we briefly mentioned the Raiders with Tyler Lindenbaum. They also signed Eagles linebacker N'Kobe Dean and Packers linebacker Quay Walker. So also addressing the defensive side of the ball. So let's move on to some of the losers real quick here. I'm going to start off with AFC East division rival of mine, a team that really, based on how we have talked on this podcast, we're going to be laughing at this for a while. All right. It's the Miami Dolphins. Now, look, I get they're going into a rebuild, right? New head coach, new regime down there completely. They cut Tua, which I think ultimately from a football perspective was the correct move. From a financial perspective, holy crap, paying for, again, $54 million to Tua, a whopping $99 million dead cap hit. What's that, like a third of the cap right there gone?
Yeah, they're going to spread that over two seasons. It'll be a post-June 1 designation. Okay. But still.
Regardless. $99 million in dead cap hit for one player. Absurd. Look, they gave big money to Malik Willis. We've been talking about on this podcast, like I said, with Samir Suleiman and Pete Prisco about giving this guy real money. He's had six career starts. And he's getting, I think, what did he end up getting? Like $30 million a year? $25 million a year?
He got $45 million guaranteed over 3 years.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable to for me is like, okay, like clearly tanking. Although that money doesn't indicate that they're tanking. Like if you're going to tank, sign a bum for pennies on the dollar, regardless. And then they also trade away Minka Fitzpatrick for a seventh rounder. You know, with the Dolphins, I don't know. I brought this up with Samir when we talked before, like, and I think you were on the podcast with us, you know, a couple years back when Tua got that extension. I think Hogan was here with us. And it's like, why are they paying this guy big monster guaranteed contract when the guy has proven nothing? I don't think these owners will ever learn. I get that they gotta, you know, retain these quarterbacks, and the quarterbacks are the premium position. They cost the most money. But my God, why would you not, like, make an assessment, or how are you not able to make an assessment at that point to be like, look, he's not the guy. Let's just start the rebuild now. Like, why? I guess they get more money than God, right? These owners. So who cares if you got to go pay Tua Tagovailoa $50 million to play for the Atlanta Falcons? Like, come on. I'm done.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. They're all valid points. I think it comes down to where the head coach is in terms of how many years in is he, how many years is the general manager in. If you admit this mistake, you might be, you know, signing your walking papers after the season. And I think that's the reality of it. That's honestly the reality. You can reset the clock after 1 or 2 years, but if you're 3-4 years into your tenure and you have to go to the owner and say, hey, we're going to have to eat $100 million, the owner's going to say, okay, that's fine. I'm going to have the next guy make the decision on who's going to replace this guy that you screwed up with. I mean, that's reality. And I think any fan, honestly, can look at the Tua contract in real time and say, that's a terrible deal. Why are you doing that? You know, I liken that to a different sport with the Philadelphia 76ers giving Joel Embiid a needless $200+ million extension when he was coming off another knee issue. In real time, you can say this is a horrible decision, completely unnecessary. And as time has gone on over the last year or so, it's become abundantly clear that that was a terrible extension, much like the Dolphins giving Tua that extension was a terrible extension. And now, John Eric Sullivan, the new general manager for the Miami Dolphins, and Jeff Hafley, the new head coach, are there to clean up the mess. And now, we talked about Malik Willis. Malik Willis is a player that John Eric Sullivan is familiar with, coming from the Packers. And much like we talked about Robert Saleh bringing guys in that he knows, and Brian Daboll bringing guys in that he knows, when you're familiar with somebody, you tend to err on that side of a free agent signing as opposed to the unknown. Because even though there's a lot of hope in the unknown, there's also a lot of fear. And I think a lot of these guys are risk averse. And I think that is why Malik Willis ended up in Miami. I think their general manager is somewhat comfortable with him, probably in his heart of hearts knows that Malik Willis is not a true franchise quarterback. I think this is another mistake. And, you know, as I said a moment ago, I believe that the Miami Dolphins are going to be squarely in the mix for the number one overall pick in the 2027 draft, because I do not believe that Malik Willis is going to be anything special. I think it's a mistake. I echo what you said. Why not just get, I won't necessarily say a bum, but why not just get a guy on a 1 year, $10 million deal? When you look at some of the backups who signed today, they essentially got 1 year, $7, $8, $9 million deals. Bring in a guy like that. as a stopgap and then really find your answer at the quarterback position in what is expected to be a very deep 2027 NFL draft. That's what I would have done, but I totally agree with you. The Dolphins, to me, we could have put them in the loser category the minute that they announced that Tua was cut. I mean, that in and of itself is grounds for being in the loser category, without a doubt.
I guess it's just the fan in me being like, we talked about it with Samir. There's no accountability.
Right.
There's no accountability for these owners. They don't care. They got more money than God. They don't care about paying a guy to play for another team and this and that. But like, I wish the owners were more involved. I wish they had more football knowledge. Right.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get that.
That's
they're business guys.
That's a limited supply. There are guys that I know who, you know, I think they're fairly smart. They're not going to be as football savvy as a coach or general manager, but they're not oblivious. Now, I know my fair share of oblivious owners and inept owners, but and I think that's, the large majority, to be honest with you. But there are some guys who actually have a firm handle on what's going on without knowing every nuance of the business.
Look, we got one inept owner on the list here, Stephen Ross. I don't really give much into him there down in Miami. We got another inept owner on this loser list today, Manish. Who is it?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's what, co-owners, Woody Johnson and Christopher Johnson, the New York Jets. And look, the Jets are an eternal punching bag and a forever laughing stock. We know this. The general manager, Darren Mooji, to his credit, has been very active since he got hired a little over a year ago. He's made 9 trades in a little over a year, including one on the first day of the legal tampering period. And that was getting, I think, 5-time Pro Bowl safety, Minkah Fitzpatrick. Now Minkah is 29 years old. Clearly, his best football is behind him, as evidenced by the fact that the Jets only had to give up a 7th-round pick to get him. And on top of that, they had to give him a 3-year, $40 million deal. And I think really that's the reason why the Dolphins traded him. He was perfectly capable last year, and I think he'll be capable this year for the Jets. He's clearly not the player that he was when he was a Pro Bowler, an All-Pro in his early mid-20s. But I still think that he's a solid player at a position that the Jets desperately needed at safety. But I'm going to put the Jets in the loser category, not for the ownership reasons. We already know that. It's I don't want to beat a dead horse on that.
But one to beat, though.
You look at the players that they signed. They signed, at this recording, at least 5 defensive players. Now, this is a defense, again, that was one of the worst in the NFL under Aaron Glenn. We already know about the fact that they did not have an interception all season in a 17-game season, which is still mind-boggling on so many different fronts. They got Fitzpatrick. They got 3 defensive linemen. And then they added a player who I covered when he entered the league. He's now 37 years old. Former Saints Pro Bowl linebacker Demario Davis, who I love as a guy. The guy is just, he's aces as a person. Did incredible things in the community in New Orleans. Played at a very, very high level, a Pro Bowl level when he was with the Saints, but he's 37 years old. They signed him to a 2-year deal for $22 million. A couple of these defensive linemen they signed to 1-year deals. So they essentially signed guys to 1-year deals or just aging players who are well past their prime. I know there's name recognition with Minkah Fitzpatrick and Demario Davis, but these guys are not difference-making players. Now, are the Jets going to be better on defense this year? Well, I mean, I would assume so. I would assume you could roll anybody out.
Can't get worse.
Yeah, you could not have been worse than whatever that was that we saw last year. So I just don't think that they made the signings that they could have made. And we talked about some of these steals at secondary, defensive backs. These are all positions, and linebacker. These are all positions that the Jets needed and could have paid for. They had a boatload of money and cap space, but they haven't done it to this point. And in a weak free agency class, if you haven't made any significant moves after day one, who are you really getting day 2, 3, 4, and so forth? So I think the Jets' plan is for them to capitalize on the draft. They've got 2 first-round draft picks. They've got four picks in the first two rounds. We already know they have three first-round draft picks in 2027. So I think it's going to be a gradual build. You know, Jets fans don't want to hear that because they have the longest playoff drought in North American sports at 15 years. But that's just the reality of it. I am not impressed with what the Jets did. You know, maybe somebody will disagree with me, but Minka Fitzpatrick is name recognition, more name than game at this point. And I think the same goes for Demario Davis.
For sure. And, you know, I'm going to keep it here in the AFC East. We'll talk about the NFC East team after. I just want to do a quick note on the Patriots. I feel they're losers today. It's tough for me to be excited about what they did, especially coming off of the Super Bowl run that they had this year. I am happy they signed a pass rusher in Draymond Jones. Clearly, he's a replacement for Clavion Chaisson. Clavion Chaisson is likely out the door in New England. They signed a fullback, Reggie Gilliam. I love it because it screws the Bills, and I've wanted to have this type of fullback on the roster last year. We didn't have it, and it was evident. So hopefully he was able to help the running game and pass protection as well. But let's be honest. The glaring needs on this team were not addressed in any way. Obviously, the wide receiver position with Diggs released. You still have the saga going on with A.J. Brown about whether or not he's going to get dealt. Seems like the Patriots are... He's going to play for the Patriots or the Eagles next year. That's what it seems like. For A.J. Brown and the offensive line, they end up losing Vidarian Lowe to the 49ers, who was a really good backup tackle, swing tackle that they had. So they have even more holes now on the offensive line. They did trade Garrett Bradbury as well. So they're getting thinner on the offensive line, not deeper. And that is concerning, for me as somebody who wants to see Drake May actually stand upright and not get hit. So we'll see what shakes out. Obviously, I'm not going to overreact for day one of the legal tampering period. But when you see guys like Mike Evans and all these other receivers signing, it's tough. It's tough. It must mean that all their chips are in the basket, that Howie Roseman's going to lower that price for the Eagles. I want to talk about the Eagles real quick. I'm going to just list off them as a loser here. And then, Manish, it's going to be right on to you. They lose three key defensive starters. Obviously, we talked about Jalen Phillips. They lose N'Kobe Dean to the Raiders. And then Reed Blankenship to the Texans. How do you feel about your Eagles after this?
Look, I think that Blankenship is replaceable. N'Kobe Dean, he's injury prone. I like him. It would have been great if the Eagles retained him. And as I said earlier, Phillips, you knew was going to be out the door. But that's, these are three starters on one of the top five defenses in the NFL. So you don't want to marginalize losing those guys. I just think that they've got just too much money that they need to give to blue chip players over the next year or two on the defensive side. So you can't keep everybody. And that's just the reality of free agency. I'm going to push back real quick before we wrap this up, Birch, on the Patriots. I thought that you raised all valid, solid points on why they could be considered a loser. But I think we're burying the lead in that I thought they were a winner because they did not overpay for Alec Pierce. And because they didn't overpay for Alec Pierce or sign a veteran like Mike Evans, a couple other guys out there who aren't going to be needle movers, that really leaves the door open to trade for A.J. Brown. And, will Mike Vrabel, Elliott Wolf, give Howie Roseman the compensation he wants? Maybe. A.J. Brown was traded to the Eagles during the first day of the draft. So there are, there's plenty of time for the New England Patriots to get this deal done. And I think that the fact they did not add anybody of significance at the wide receiver position increases the odds, in my mind, that they will ultimately trade for A.J. Brown. So if you look at it through that lens, you can take some solace that perhaps in the long run, the Patriots are going to be a winner by not signing anybody at the wide receiver position to big money today.
If it happens. I've been down this road so many times with the Patriots, albeit under a different regime, with Bill Belichick where they don't do something and you hear the rumblings and all the talking about the big move that's going to come and it never comes. So I'm a little scarred on that sense from years past. I really hope that this is different, because if you release Diggs and then you don't go out and get these guys, what are you doing? You telling me you're going to draft a guy at 31 and wide receiver? Okay. You want to do that. We're still not addressing the offensive line. We're still not really beefing up the edge rushing depth that this team desperately missed last year when they got hurt. I'm going to reserve the full judgment on it. I'm saying, but if you ask me today, we're recording on Monday of legal tampering, I'm disappointed.
Yeah, I always find it funny when Patriots fans describe them as scarred. I mean, tell that to a Jet fan.
I knew that was coming.
Or a Browns fan, you know, or a Lions fan who's never even been to the Super Bowl in the history of the franchise.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, you're right. Ultimately, let's see what the payoff is. I can't imagine that they're just going to roll out the guys they have on their roster at the receiver position plus a rookie wide receiver. I think there's more to come. It might not be a game-changing move, but as you said, it seems abundantly clear at this point that A.J. Brown will either be a Philadelphia Eagle or a New England Patriot, and there no in-between. So, you know, time will tell. We'll see. I do want to say before we close up shop here, be sure to subscribe, download, rate, and give us a 5-star review if you're enjoying this podcast and want to spread the message. That will go a long way to helping us continue to grow. Please comment as well. We're always looking to improve. Nobody is perfect. Remember to follow us at Tackles Pod on Instagram and TikTok, and at Between the Tackles on Facebook. 4 video clips. Burge does an incredible job getting the highlights of each episode out. So you can, if you have a short attention span, you can go there and get some of the highlights. Just be sure to subscribe and comment on YouTube as well. We're trying to grow our subscriber base in an organic way and bring you, you know, the most insightful guests across all corners of the NFL world to bring you great content. And, you know, it's been a good start for us, and we hope to continue to grow. But that can only help if you, you know, give us some feedback and help us continue to improve.
Absolutely. And I will be the first to say on Twitter, I love being called an idiot. So be sure to come at me. If my opinions stink, be sure to let me know they stink, because it's always fun to hear that. As always, I'm Burge with my good pal Manish. Enjoy the rest of free agency. We will catch you at the end for the full wrap up.